A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Trina Shoemaker, producer, engineer, and mixer, and this is Bridge the Atlantic.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic's interviews, where we get to know the people behind and in front of the creative industries. We're your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber-Smith from Scotland, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists and musicians. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as Electric Kiwi.
And I'm singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Marcin Avelli from Canada, a man who wears many hats, literally and figuratively. When I'm not releasing music under my own name, I'm producing and mixing records for other artists. Speaking of which, if you'd like me to work on your next song or album, especially if it's acoustic, get in touch. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Spotify, and Patreon, which are all my name, Marcin Avelli.
We hope that you like our new intro, and that's just one of the many changes that we have on the way. Mm-hmm. We are also excited to share that we made some significant updates to our Patreon page, and we invite you to become an official patron of the show to help things keep going and growing.
Yes, I had fun doing that, producing that new little jingle. Perks include early access to content on through our Patreon, as well as sponsored ads at the start and end of our shows, and your chance to co-host an episode alongside Ross and I.
We've also got official BTA shirts available to purchase on our website, which we are modeling as always.
There's modeling a link to is them a strong word.
Yes, it's maybe not the most accurate word, but it is
them.
A word. There's a link to them in our show notes, so go and get them. And if you use the coupon code BTARocks, you'll receive 10% off your purchase as our little way of saying obrigado.
Oh, he switched it up. Lastly, I recently released a brand new acoustic EP called The Reimagining Volume 1. You can listen to it everywhere and anywhere. And I'm also working on my second full-length solo album. I encourage you to be a part of it at my website, marcinavelli.com. All the info's there.
All there. Joining us this week out of Alabama is Grammy Award-winning producer Trina Shoemaker. Trina has worked on records for artists including Sheryl Crow, Brandi Carlile, The Dixie Chicks, Queens of the Stone Age, and Josh Ritter. And in 1998, she became the first woman to win a Grammy for Best Engineered Album.
Oh, that's amazing. Trina is partnered with Dauphin Street Sound, a world-class recording studio run with heart and soul in Mobile, Alabama. We're really excited to hear about her experience in the music industry and the advice she'd offer to aspiring producers, engineers, and musicians. Welcome to the show, Trina.
Hi.
Thanks
nice
for
to
coming.
Be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
You are
course.
Welcome.
It's
Before
pleasure.
We jump in, I actually want to say that that Brandi Carlile album, I want to say the...
Fire Watcher's Daughter.
That's the one. I was listening to that today, and it's been a while since I last listened to it, but one of my favorite records. I love the sound and the warmth that that record has. So you played a big part of that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Kudos.
You're welcome.
Now tell us three things about yourself that everyone should know.
I am extraordinarily organized, to a bizarre fault almost. I am, a clean freak, and I'm a closet artisan perfumer.
I'm also a clean freak. And I'd like mm-hmm. to think that I'm organized. I want to be organized, but having two little ones in the house is just impossible to be organized. I try.
I get such joy out of balancing. I want to balance the desk I'm sitting at now. I'm like, okay, look, we're going
yeah, to get some. Yeah, I can relate to that.
It's all mixing. I mix my life as I walk through it by balancing objects.
I like that. I like
and
that.
And my husband, you know, we've fought over it. He's like, why do you move stuff? You know, it's like, I rebalanced the room. It's a new song in here today. I put that, you know, vase there. And I thought then the, you know, collection of guitar strings and the piece of pottery could be there.
Gotta use the full spectrum,
so,
right?
Yeah.
I love it.
I like that. I like that you're mixing your life as you walk through it. That
Absolutely.
Needs to be like, that could be your tagline.
It is.
Great. Can you make that happen for me? Can you make a hashtag for that?
We're going to create a nice image for you.
I need some help with that. Thanks, guys.
Well, talking about balancing your life, let's talk about how you balance music. Let's get right into it.
Yes.
Very good.
I'd be really interested in finding out how you approach a session and maybe what your ideal session would look like.
I approach sessions. It's hard for me to look at that as... in even like a quantitative way, because the last 32 years of my life, I have approached sessions. And so I'm so comfortable and familiar in studios that it's hard for me to remember or how I would help someone else, you know how to approach a session, because it's almost all that I know how to do. But what always comes with them, no matter what, even now, all these years later, is extreme anxiety in the beginning, that is this going to be the one that won't sound good? Will they find out I'm a fraud? Like all these years of making records, I don't know what I'm doing. And of course I do, but it's never a given that every session is going to just be stunning and amazing and we're going to kill it. So I set up very early. I want to be in there the day before. I want it set up, you know, just every single thing done, so that when the artist walks in, I can say, we're ready to record. And then the several problems that may arise, they feel easy. That's how I like functionally walk into a room and think, okay, let's get some microphones out. Let's come up with a layout and I'll do the back line and you guys start setting up mics in that part. I want every one of them to go really, really well. And so, yeah, I'm nervous before a session. A lot of the records I do, they need to be good. These guys and these artists go out and sell their records at their shows. It's how they live. It's how they pay their mortgages and stuff. So suddenly their record, it might not chart. It might not even come out on a label or anything, but it will feed their family. And that sounds a bit, you know, dramatic, but it's true. And I care that much. I think I want your record to sound just stunning. And then you're going to go, you know, pay for your kid's school with it. And that's awesome.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Any producer I work with, if I don't feel like they're just 100% in it like I am, then right. What's the point? You know?
And I'm as nervous for them as I would be if a celebrity was going to walk in. Because right. Either way, when you walk up to your vocal mic and put your headphones on and you start singing, I want you to think, oh, this is mixed. My live performance is already done. It's fantastic. And this is what my record's going to sound like.
How important do you think it is for producers and engineers to stay true to their own preferences and techniques when collaborating?
Many artists that I'm working with, they want to feel and sing their songs, and they want to sing them, and they do not want them molested. They have to also be taught too. Comping is no different than a live take. It's just that we're taking the best of several live takes and putting them together.
I love comping.
And all of the great, that's it. I love comping vocals. Yeah. I still get an enormous amount of almost like, frankly, sensual joy out of the act of comping vocals, because that's how I came up, and it's an art and it's a craft. If I'm in a situation where in order for that comp to really be perfect, I will auto-tune. If they ask me not to, fine, re-sing it. And I'll go down whatever path. I'm usually with artists that don't want to be auto-tuned, and so for them, I don't. It's never going to be the go-to. There was a time, and there was a very distinct line when that time happened that went from that existed and we used it and there was a time before and it simply didn't. And that's when, in order to get a vocal absolutely with the intonation perfect, I'm sorry, singers were better. They were. They worked harder at it. They had to be.
Yeah.
We had to spend hours. And I still do spend hours comping vocals. It was a different architecture that records got made in the analog world. The vocals are still flawless. I listen back. There's no pitchiness. Mm-hmm. We worked on them and went for them. We still spent a lot of time on them. I still spend a lot of time on them. Mm-hmm. It was just, I have to say, I think people sang better. I'm sorry.
I personally spend a lot of time with that, and I'm perfectly fine with comp. I don't understand why anyone wouldn't be. You're taking hopefully my best performances and making an impossibly best performance that just didn't happen on its own, but it did happen. I did sing those parts. You just took that one line or this chorus.
Do you know what's significant, though? And I noticed this only because I had kids, and then you know, hearing modern music or popular music and working with younger people, because I am older than, I'm of the older group of record makers now. People hear autotune so much that it is actually embedded into our collective listening experience, and younger people do not hear it when I do. They don't hear it. They don't recognize it, what it sounds like. And so it's accepted and it's not even heard, even when it's pretty brutal. And I'm like, that is so tuned. And it's and not in a bad way, not that that society has been dumbed down where they no longer can understand a tuneful vocal, but that that actual acoustic phenomenon that takes place when auto-tune changes the algorithm and changes the waveform. It's so readily, it's so prevalent that it is not recognized as an anomaly. And I find that amazing and cool, I guess, whatever. It's like, wow, you don't hear that. And I do. Really, I hear it a lot.
And that kind of leads into the next thing I want to ask. So, I mean, kind of talking about like technology changing and evolving things. From a producer and an engineer's perspective, how would you say that technology has influenced the way things have changed in the music industry? And do you think it makes it easier for new producers to get involved? Does it make it harder? How do you view that?
I don't think that it actually, I mean, it significantly changed, obviously, the people's access to music on both sides of that, of that architecture. So, for example, now people can, I can grab my phone, go to Tidal. I only do Tidal because it's paid, and hear a song immediately on my phone. Well, that's a given. And, but it also has made the ability to create product that can be readily available for our side of it. That, I mean, there was a time when I couldn't have mixed in a building behind my house that didn't have a console and a tape machine. Now I can. Therefore, I'm more affordable. There's far more music out there. The ability to make records became more accessible, and the ability to get music became more accessible. So it's not like the accessibility outperformed or whatever the ability to make it. So we all benefited. All that changed was more people get to make records. Records cost less. Hits are still hits. People still make a metric shit ton of cash if they have a hit. I want a hit really bad. I never really had a hit where I got rich. I would love that because then I would open up a horse rescue. My other passion.
There you go. That sounds good to me.
Make perfume. Make records for my friends.
There you go.
Yep.
I love it.
And you, I like you. I'm gonna make a record for you too.
There
you
go. Are you ready for 20 questions? Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Meat or veggies?
Vegetables.
Twitter or Facebook?
Facebook.
Indie or major?
Indie.
Education or experience?
Both.
Tennessee or Alabama?
Alabama.
Canada or Scotland?
Oh, Scotland.
Talent or attitude?
Talent.
City or country?
Country.
Style or substance?
Substance.
Yoga or yogurt?
Yogurt.
Elton John or Billy Joel?
Elton John.
Shure or Sennheiser?
Sennheiser. Sorry, Shure. I love you too, man. I love you.
Mixing or producing?
Mixing.
Oh, that was an easy... I was surprised by how easy that answer was. Technique or emotion?
Emotion.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Michael Jackson. You know, can I interrupt? Oh, no, sorry. I won't.
Of course you can interrupt.
I got to see the Jackson 5 and the Dancing Machine tour when they wore the yellow and orange. No. Dancing, dancing, dancing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like 9.
Fuck, oh, wow. That's
so cool.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Yeah. Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Neither. Sorry.
Oh, how about neither on my radar. Who comes to mind? Who comes to mind?
Sam Cooke.
Okay, there we go.
He's not got to do with them, but that's what I'm thinking about at that moment.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't think Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson are really related anyway.
No, no,
yeah,
no.
Okay, right, yeah.
Whale or kale?
When you say whale, do you mean like an animal?
Meaning the animal. Yeah,
but it could be whale. It could be
I mean, this question really.
That's
like, this
hard
one's completely open to interpretation.
Oh yeah,
there are. I eat a lot of kale. All right.
Okay.
But I need, you know, there are certain aspects of whales that whales are far more important in the world than kale. My need to eat kale, whales.
Selfishly, I want kale more than whale. I have it every day too.
Yeah.
Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler. So I'm saying love. Got it.
And the final question. Oh, please be kind.
Okay.
Yeah, your final question, Ross or Marcio?
I'll do you both.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm married, and I just
we didn't take it like that. Don't worry.
No.
But we are so happy.
I need you both.
I'm so happy you didn't.
It's not going anywhere without you both.
Yes.
All right.
It makes me happy. I didn't lose.
Aww. No, Trina, we're both winners here, Marcio.
For aspiring audio engineers and producers, what advice would you offer for them to get their foot in the door, and whatever that metaphorical door means, and put themselves in the best position to build a successful career?
I could not tell anybody how to get their foot in the door. I really couldn't, because I don't know. I do not know how you do that. But I do know that in order for you to find the door, get this foot in, and find some way to be to do this for a living, I don't know how to tell you how to be a success either, because that's a personal measure of what is success. You need to, when you're sitting at your console or in front of your DAW, you know, when you're working on stuff, you need to find the confidence in yourself to believe that your taste and your aesthetic can be malleable, can be universal, that you believe that what you're doing to that sound, to that music, is true to your, like, that you're crafting something to the best of your ability that's great, and that you are an artist not because you have been given that privileged, rarefied right, but that you choose to live in an artistic state of being, and that you have confidence to say, I just put a mix up, guys. I really did what I really felt really served this song. I hope you like it. And you did give it your all. And when they come back and there's 1,000 changes or they don't, that doesn't hurt. You start over again for them. Your ego can only be part of it insofar as it's the driver for you to actually sit in there for 10 hours and focus, and that believe that what you are doing sounds good. And when you can trust yourself and have that confidence, you can at least approach almost any artist and say, I can get it for you, or, you know, I can, let me do a mix for you. Or you have to sit there and believe what you're doing is that you're good at it, that you have talent, and that you're as good as anybody else. And you might not make a great deal of money. You might not get your name or have the recognition that you so richly deserve. But that you're putting out quality, and that you believe. And the way to get that is to spend a great deal of time with music and crafting it and working on it, and not being afraid to deliver a mix, but then do a whole other mix just for you. And put in a lot of that time, because I don't know how you get your foot in the door. You have to get a system and get people's get tracks and work on them.
The confidence wherever you're going to get them from it inside, of course.
You have to build
that confidence.
You well, do.
Winning,
and if you're
winning
very
a Grammy
young,
probably helps with your confidence. And I do want to say, like, that is a historical moment to be the first woman to win a Grammy for Best Engineered Album. What was that moment
awesome.
Like? Yeah, just share a little bit. I know that was a while back, but we'd love to hear about it.
It was cool. I got to go with Chad Blake, who was, it was myself and Chad and Andy. And I had been down in New Orleans and did a lot of recording with Cheryl for that record. And I was going old school because they wanted to, like, be able to fit a lot of stuff on a 24 track, you know, stretch of tape. And so I would just take, you know, drums and bus them all down. You know, they were multi-tracked out, but bus them all down to a single mono drum track. And just like how Dan and Malcolm and Mark, Dan Lanois, Malcolm Byrne and Mark Howard worked in that studio, because I worked at the Lanois studio for a while, and just crazy stuff, but just like getting this stuff going. And then it all gets sent to Chad to mix. And he actually called me to say, I don't know who you are, but these tracks are fantastic. Whatever you do, this crazy mono drum stuff. And, you know, I thought I was going to maybe even get in trouble or get found out. But, and he loved it. And then we became fast friends, and he became not just a mentor, but like a hero, a personal hero. I loved him then, and I loved him now. I adored Chad Blake. And he was so helpful to me. So he went to the Grammys with me, because I didn't have a boyfriend or anything. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go by myself. Great. this will be embarrassing, more embarrassing, being around celebrities when I felt not celebrity-ish. I was always around him too when I was around Cheryl, and she was like, Michael Douglas is coming by. What does that even mean? You know, Meg Ryan's coming by, you know, so you just, you don't, I don't even speak to, I was just like, because nobody talked to me anyway. So, but I never had the right clothes. I always felt like my face was broke out. My makeup was never right. My hair always looked stupid. It looks better now, by the way. And I just always felt awkward and bizarre, but I'm smart. So it wasn't like I couldn't hold a conversation. So I was terrified, but I had a very expensive dress and I looked good in it. My hair looked wrong. My makeup was wrong. All that was wrong. But me and Chad rolled in and my feet hurt and I stepped on Shania Twain's trailing dress thing because we were placed towards the front and the whole thing was a trip. And then when they said, you know, this was early on pre-show, but the stars are there pre-show too, a lot of them. And they said my name and we went up there and got it and it was awesome. It didn't help with my confidence in terms of me thinking, okay, I'm amazing and everything I do will be amazing. It helped like my family, especially like my dad and stuff, understand what I do in the biggest way they could. And they were very, very proud. And that was cool. And I never got a trophy. I never was a sport person in high school. I never got won anything. I was never going to be, I never got like a cheerleading honor. I never got shit. That was my first trophy. And it's heavy and big. I love it.
Pretty awesome more than trophy one. To be your first trophy.
I got three.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
And, three sure.
And the medals they send are quality medallions with like a beautiful ribbon. No, I love the trappings of it all. And I love, you know, Neris and I love the Recording Academy for what they do and what they give. You know, the Grammys were, then it was hugely embarrassing. And then I just wanted to go back to Chad's house, shoes off and smoke weed and call my friends, which is what I did.
But I do think that it's important that it didn't make you feel like a big shot, because I think that would have, that is the problem if that does that to anybody, you know.
No, it made me feel more scared that I really could be found out, that I haven't a clue why this or how this is happening, where I get the sounds from, how I even come up with anybody. I make it all up as I go.
Instinct, that's the way.
And learn stuff and understand music on a very, very, and I have a very passionate relationship with actual sounds.
From your perspective, for artists who are going into the studio, what advice would you give them to make the most out of the session? Like, how can they go in and
rehearse to a metronome?
Yeah.
Every single time.
How about for singers beyond metronome? Is there anything else? Anything else that they should be? Because that's, of course, the most, you know, out of any musician, it's the most vulnerable, I think, and the most anxiety ridden, just to go bare your soul. You know, not that I'm speaking from experience at all, of course. So do you have any tips for singers particularly?
Well, I guess I do, because if I could offer an instrument in the studio to help an artist, you know, get through a part or call out a part. I can strum some guitar chords, but I'm an appalling guitar player. I can play on the piano, but I'm a terrible actual musician. I'm a brilliant musician inside, but I spent all my time learning to record. If I'd have spent it all learning to play piano, I'd be a brilliant piano player, because I do feel it very deeply, but I can sing enough to say, no, when you sang this, and they'll sing their part. I can do backing vocals. I can come up with whole harmony structures for people. And so my voice would be my communicative tool. And so you have to, one, understand that your voice is your instrument, and it is, when you walk into the studio, no longer the window into your soul. Because the fact is, the window into your soul is your personal realm, and the rest of us really don't care. The song is meant to make a new window into my soul for myself, for me to climb into and view my life. It's your gift to me as the artist. It's why I'm going to pay for your music. It's why I'm going to want to record you. It's why I'm going to want to craft your vocal. And if I love your music, your gift and what I'm paying you for isn't you at all, or where you come from, or what you do, or how you did it. It's that through that song, I will bond. I will attach to it my jewels and my bad stuff. And it lets me get to my place. And that, so I don't actually care any longer about why you wrote it, the pain or the glory or anything. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just saying that's what I get from a song. If I met Elton John today, and believe me, I love Elton John, and I need him. I can't live in a world where his music isn't, because I never have, for one thing. But when I hear like Someone Saved My Life Tonight and those opening chords, it brings me so intensely to a sidewalk in Joliet, Illinois, and a specific curb. and the heat coming off the sidewalk and my little girl legs and my little girl, you know, trauma of what was going on in my life then, that there is no other single thing in the universe that exists that can bring me there except for bum, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-bum, and that. So that's Bernie and Elton John's and the entire band who played that and the people who arranged it. That's their gift to me, and I bought it several times. And so they need to come into the studio having removed themselves from their ego, removed themselves from all of that, and use and know and understand that their voice is an instrument that they can control, that they can sculpt and craft and manipulate, and that it's time for them to deliver that crafting and that practice. And even if you're young, you wrote a song about the breakup of your, hell, if it was about the death of your partner, something so heavy for you and so hard, but you can't come into the studio and actually cry when you sing it. It's no good. It's only good to you. Go home. Because again, you have to be able to say, I've taken this and I have crafted for you and I'm putting it for sale. The culmination of this, I'm making it from a bad thing to a good thing. I've released it, you know, and so you need to separate yourself from your ego, your insecurity and all of it, and come in and perform at the height of your potential. And when you're in that booth and you got the headphones on and they're going to sound good if you're with me, and you're going to feel safe if you're with me too, because I am there to capture it. I'm your mirror, you know? And so you need to get in there, and then you go to that place where you wrote the song from. Even if you're sick and it happened 2 years ago and you're in a bad mood or whatever, and you feel fat, you get there and you go to that place and you sing it from that place. But I don't want to know about that place. And if I have to know about that place, that means you're not performing well. You used to drink a lot, you know, whatever. Do you get what I mean?
I'm in silence right now because you're hitting me so hard right now. And this is exactly what I need to hear right now personally. So it's
excellent.
It's perfect.
And to bring it again around to actual hard advice for a young artist to come into the studio on their booked days, mm-hmm. that isn't, you know, a veteran, you know, mm-hmm. vocalist in the studio. You are there to do a job on those days, and that mm-hmm. job is to perform. And you do have to get enough experience to understand that that's a skill set to mm-hmm. learn in. You know, you're tired, your throat hurts, you do have to treat your voice as an instrument, keep it in tune, get enough sleep, drink a lot of water, and come in and use it. Like really cool artists, they'll walk in the control room and they really behave as if Brandi Carlile's one of them. I mean, she's brilliant at it. She'll walk in, she'll have sung, she'll come in and she'll listen, and she's so objective. It's mm-hmm. almost as if she says, and Brandi wouldn't really have sung it that way. You know, like mm-hmm. in other words, she disembodies herself from her performance, sees that as her instrument, mm-hmm. and is very critical of it without, you know, being a drama or, oh, I'm just sounding so shitty because I'm hurting.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
What is wrong? And fix it. Like, and she's super brilliant at separating her emotion from her instrument. And great vocalists in the studio do that.
Trina, where's the best place for people to connect with you online?
At www.trinashoemaker.com. Mm-hmm. And you can check me out on Facebook.
Of course. All the socials.
And Twitter, where I haven't posted for probably 2 years.
I know what's that when I was doing my research.
I go on Instagram. Go on Instagram, too. I'm a bit of an Instagrammer. All right.
Perfect.
Cool. And as for us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, iTunes, and YouTube. And don't forget to visit our website and pick up one of our shirts while you are there.
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, my brand new acoustic EP, The Reimagining Volume 1, is now available everywhere. I'm also working on my second full-length solo album. You can be a part of it at marcianovelli.com/pledge. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, and Patreon, which are all my name, Marcianovelli.
And I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment. You can check out my work at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi and Facebook Electric Kiwi Design.
This episode was brought to you by 30 Roses, a virtual assistant and consultant to musicians and other creatives, as well as Chris Keaton, Music Entrepreneur HQ, and Social Surge. All links are in the show notes, so check them out, because what do they do, Ross?
They keep the show alive.
Wow.
And if you would like to sponsor the show, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic. As we mentioned earlier, we recently updated our rewards, which now includes sponsorship at the start of the interviews, as well as an opportunity for you to co-host an episode. Mm-hmm. Make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and iTunes so you don't miss any episodes, and leave us a comment and let us know what you think of the show.
Yes. Thank you so much, Trina. This has been so fantastic. Wow.
Listen, I loved it. I didn't know what was going to happen here. I've never done anything like this. I loved it. You guys are fantastic. I'm totally going to be so up into Bridge the Atlantic. I'm going to go to all the things. I want to be a sponsor or do something. Yeah. It was really fun. I enjoyed it.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.